We're doing Parashat Ito. Ladies and gentlemen, now the moment you've all been waiting for. That's our Parsha. That is our Parsha. All of creation has been waiting for this moment. A connection between heaven and earth. Hashem clearly says, this is what I want of you. Hashem finally comes down and says, here I am. And this is the only time I'm going to do this. And I'm going to tell you what I want. So that's our Parsha in a nutshell. Parshas Yisro. Begins with Yisro. It's interesting that it's called Parshas Yisro. If you think about it, there's a phenomenal message there. Oh. The capacity of taking someone in who's not from within. From the very beginning, from Yitzias Mitzrayim, we have Geirim. From Avraham Avinu, we have Geirim. And even the parsha of the Ten Commandments is called Yisro. So, Yisro comes. We'll do a quick overview. Moshe goes out to greet him. And Yisro is very happy when he hears all the miracles Hashem did on behalf of their people. He offers the sacrifice. The next morning, Moshe's judging. Everyone's waiting. Long lines. And Yisro comes and says, ask God, but I say you should establish a system of judges. People shouldn't have to wait just for you. And that's what they do. And then Yisro goes off. We come to Mount Sinai. And Moshe goes up. And Hashem says, tell the Jewish people, you saw how I took care of you. I took you out of Egypt. If you listen to what I have to say, so you will be my chosen nation. You will be my nation of priests. Here's what you tell them. Moshe gathers the people. And everyone says, whatever Hashem says, we're ready. Nase, we're ready to perform. What did they say? Kosho diber Hashem Nase. Whatever Hashem says, we're ready. So Hashem says, okay, I'm going to come, give you prophecy. Everyone will see that I'm giving you prophecy, and no one will dare question your prophecy forever. Yours is going to be a prophecy that the nation will always believe in. And prepare the people, and they should know no one can ascend up the mountain. Anyone who does will get the death penalty. And the nation prepares themselves, they sanctify themselves, they separate from their wives for 3 days, and then there is great thunder, and Hashem appears, and we have the Ten Commandments. I am Hashem your God. I took you out of Egypt. You're not allowed to worship any other force. You're not allowed to make any figurine. Don't bow them, don't serve them. I am zealous. I take revenge. I punish. I also repay for those who do my mitzvot. Don't take Hashem's name in vain. Hashem won't forgive a person who does. Remember the day of Shabbat to sanctify it. Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. Honor your parents. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't give false testimony. Don't covet your friend's house, wife, servant, ox, donkey, everything he owns. Ten Commandments. Okay. Everyone sees it. And they tell Moshe, we can't handle this level of spirituality. From now on, you give us the Torah. And Moshe says, okay, this was a one-time thing, but once you saw this, you're going to be able to stand up to every test. That's why Hashem wanted you to have something firm to stand on, that now whatever happens in your lives, you're always going to be able to look back to this great event, and that will give you the capacity to withstand any test. And Moshe ascends to heaven. Hashem tells Moshe, tell them, you saw I spoke to you from heaven. Don't make any figurines of gold and silver. I want a simple, humble altar. After everything you've seen, so now you might think, maybe now that we see how awesome God is, we'll make things of gold, silver. Hashem says, no, I want a sacrifice to be brought on an altar of earth. And wherever you make mention, wherever you learn my Torah, I will bless you. If you make me an altar of stone, so then it cannot be cut by sword, and the ascent to the altar must be smooth. I don't want your private parts revealed as you go up. An interesting conclusion to such a holy parsha. Okay, let's review the parsha now with some more depth. We just finished a fight with Amalek.
Soft voices. They were not on a high enough level to
okay.
I would say you're on a higher spiritual level when you can see voices.
Okay. I have no idea. I don't know what it means to see voices.
Is it lower?
I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm unaware.
Wait, that's in this parsha?
Yes.
This person said it was a lower spiritual level because, I don't know, I cannot
explain
it.
So in last week's parsha we fought off evil, and you'll notice that whenever we speak about Am Yisrael growing, you have to remove the evil in order for the good to go up. The Egyptians have to sink in order for us to ascend. Amalek has to be fought in order for the Torah to be given. In davening we say it too. And only from there can I get to Allah Tzadikim, Allah Hasidim, Etzemach David, Liushnai Mircha. The Gemara says there's an order in the world. Part of that order is you gotta fight evil. You can't just say, let the good rise. The evil has to be put down. Yisro hears the miracles and he comes. He comes with Tzipora and the two children. And he sends word to Moshe, and Moshe goes out to greet him. One of the interesting relationships we see throughout the Torah is father-in-law, son-in-law. Father-in-law, daughter-in-law. And the Torah repeatedly shows us how warm that relationship is. Between Yaakov and his daughters-in-law, they're called his daughters. Between Yisro and Moshe, between Yocheved and her daughter or her daughter-in-law. You see it again and again. Moshe goes out to greet him, and Moshe tells him everything that happened. And Yisro is happy on one hand. And even though he ran away from Paro himself, and he saw how evil Paro was, it's hard for him to hear how much they suffered. And the Torah tells us the sensitivity we should have. That you speak about someone who came from a certain country, be careful what you say. We had a guy here who came from Europe, and whenever his country used to lose a soccer game, he'd get upset that everyone was so happy that the Israelis won the whatever it was. I don't know which teams, which countries have teams that play against Israel. Okay. So, what? Italy, no? Okay, I don't know. At any rate, he once told me he's not comfortable telling people this, but he still feels a loyalty to his soccer team, the country he came from. So, even though he did gear, he's a full-fledged Jew, he believes in it, he's patriotic, served in the army, but it's still his soccer team. So, Yisro... Yeah, we should all be able to understand that. And Yisro comes and he's happy at our success. But it's difficult for him to hear about how the Egyptians suffered. And Chazal say we have to respect that. We have to have a sensitivity to that.
He's Midianite, he's not Egyptian.
But he came from Egypt. He moved from Egypt to Midian. Originally he was one of Paro's advisors. So originally he was in Egypt. Yisro was originally in Egypt.
Where in the parsha do we have Yitro finding it hard to hear?
Vayichad Yitro. Vayichad Yitro in Pasuk Tes, in the ninth Pasuk of the parsha. So Chazal interpret that to be dual. Vayichad in Aramaic means he was happy. Vayichad in Hebrew means he became sharp. So our sages learned that the prime meaning is Aramaic. Vayichad, he was happy. Chadu in Aramaic is happiness. Okay? It also fits into the verse. He was happy. And so he blessed Hashem. He says, I now recognize Hashem's greatness. What was so spectacular? What was so spectacular was the Midah Keneged Midah. The Ramban explains that Hashem purposely judges the world with the exact same thing a person does, he gets judged. Because if it's left open, so then everyone can claim everything's a sign. Sure, I didn't daven Shacharis this morning, so I don't know why. I daven Shacharis this morning, so it rained. If a person says, I daven for rain and it rained, the person says, I didn't care for my neighbor, and then Hashem didn't care for me when I needed help. Someone else asked me for something and I didn't help him. So then when I needed help, I didn't get it. Hashem always does things, midah keneged midah. The Egyptians sunk Jewish babies, so they sunk in the Yam Suf. Midah keneged midah. Hashem purposely judges the world in a way that it's, so to speak, an eye for an eye. And the idea is you should be able to see Hashem's hand in it. Because if there isn't a similarity between the punishment and reward and the action, so then you can never know if it's Hashem. Yisro had seen every type of shenanigan under the sun. So he knew all the tricks. And he says, but no one else does this. That you sin in this area, Hashem punishes in that area. The Egyptians didn't let the Jewish women immerse in the Nile, so they remained with their menstruation blood. So then all the Nile turns to blood. The Egyptians forced the Jews to pick their clothes of lice, so the Egyptians got covered with lice. The Egyptians forced the Jews to go hunt wild animals for them, so the Egyptians got plagued with wild animals. The Egyptians forced the Jews to shepherd their animals, so all the Egyptian animals died. But step after step, he saw the Hashem's hand. He said, this is unique, that Hashem pays back in an identical form to the sin. So Yisro offers sacrifice, and the next morning he sees how everyone's waiting in line, and the bureaucracy is terrible. People have to wait in long lines. It's not right. People get frustrated. People leave. It's not respectful to the people. So he says, ask Hashem if you could set up judges. So Moshe in his humility checks it out, and Hashem says, yes, that's the way to do it. So that's what they do. When did this whole story happen? What laws did they have? So one understanding is, all of this happened after the giving of the Torah. We have a rule in Mukdamu Mulchal Batorah that the Torah is not written in chronological order. It's not a history book. So for whatever reason, the Torah chose to put the story of Yisro here. Some say to juxtapose the story of Yisro with Amalek. Two foreigners, they both heard that Hashem was helping the Jewish people. Amalek chose to attack, Yisro chose to join, but this isn't when it happened chronologically. Now that makes sense, because that's why we had laws. That's why they were standing in line to ask Moshe questions. But then it would turn out that Moshe's own children weren't there at the giving of the Torah. And Moshe describes to him all the amazing things Hashem did to the Egyptians. Why didn't he mention the giving of the Torah? That's more spectacular than everything that happened with the Egyptians. So there are two opinions in the Medrash, two opinions among the commentaries. When did the story take place? Before the giving of the Torah, the way it's written, and then it would turn out that Moshe's children were there. But then you have to figure out what were the laws, what were the lines. You could say that's the laws that Hashem gave them in Mara. In last week's parasha, there was a series of laws given them there. Or was this story really, did all of this happen much later? Like Rashi says.
Also, I was
wondering, what does
that mean
that Yitro
advises Moshe
on
how to run
his government?
It's almost like
Yitro's
giving Moshe
a
law.
He says, ask Hashem. It says, yeah. It says, V'tzivecha Elokim in Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Im tadvar ze tase v'tzivecha Elokim, and Hashem approves and commands that you should do it. Just before Shlishi. Yeah. Before you, you're in chapter Yutet. In chapter Yutet, just before Shlishi.
Kaf Gimel.
Let's Pasuk Chaf Gimel. So Yitro says that Tzivcha Elokim, Pasuk 23. He says, if God will tell you to do so.
I missed that one.
Okay?
That's still interesting that he's able to come up with something that God would like.
Yeah. He also says it in Pasuk Yutet. Vihi Elokim Imach. Hashem should be with you, so to speak. Hashem should approve of the idea. Vayichan Sham Yisrael, just after Revi. It's been 3 months since we left Egypt, 49 days. We've been ascending day after day. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Israel camps in unison. Vayichan. What does Vayichan mean? United, one person. Ki'ish echad belev echad. Our sages say, like one man with one heart. Israel camps opposite the mountain. And this is how we can receive the Torah, if we're unified. Every other time we'd camp and we'd leave, there'd be fights. This is mine, this is yours. I came first, you came first. In order for true Torah to be attained, there has to be unity. And the Torah stresses, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, they camped as one person. And Hashem offers them the Torah, and they say, Nase, we'll do it. So then later on, it says, Am Yisrael camped at the foot of the mountain, and we have a tradition that Hashem lifted the mountain over their heads, and said, you want to keep the Torah fine? Good and dandy. And if not, that's where you're going to be buried. What was that necessary for? They said they're interested. Right? They said Nase. Next week's parsha, they're going to say Nase v'nishma. We will do and we will obey. So what do you have to threaten them for? So the simple understanding is, it's like a king. He has loyal subjects. He's very nice to them. They're very nice to him. He does a million things for them. And then he says to them, okay, now I have a series of laws. Are you guys ready? So everyone's lovey-dovey. They say, sure, we're ready. So he brings out all his infantrymen. He says to them, okay, everyone, take out your swords. Are you ready? So the subjects are standing there. What'd we do? What? So he says, okay, I'm very happy you guys accepted my laws. Now go home. What does it mean? It means it's not enough that you want to do it when we're all lovey-dovey. Whenever you sign a contract, you guys are going to see. Whenever you sign a deal, at the beginning, everyone's very nice. This is what we'll do. This is the agreement. Sure, you want it this way, fine. You want it that way, fine. Suddenly, when push comes to shove, 3 weeks later, I thought you said you're going to fix that leaky faucet. Yeah, I'll get to it. Suddenly, it's not such a sure. Suddenly, I don't have time for you. Suddenly, you're a pain in the neck. So, Chazal told us that the Torah wants a balance. Avod me'ira, avod me'ava. You have to serve out of love, but there also has to be fear. This isn't the game. It's not just because I'm so excited, everything's great. It's also because I don't have a choice. Because avod me'ava, you have to serve out of love. Because sometimes you feel like kicking back. It's not about, I love him, but it gets on my nerves. You feel like giving a kick. Says the Torah, avod me'ira, you have to serve out of fear because you have to know you don't have that right. Because if you really have fear and respect, you're not going to do it. Not because you love, because there are moments when you don't love. Avod me'ahava, you have to serve out of love because there are moments when you feel like hating. Where I'm scared of you, I'll do what you want, but where's my heart? Huh? My heart is very distant. I would much rather, I feel like I lost my business because it was closed on Shabbos. The stock market plummeted, Yom Kippur, in the year 2008. How many people were thinking, if I didn't keep Yom Kippur, I'd still be alive. I'd still be alive and kicking financially. So sometimes you don't feel so in love with the way of the Torah. But you don't dare do differently. And then you feel like hating, says the Gemara. Avod ma'ava, one has to serve out of love to know that if you come to hate, you say, I love, I don't hate. Sometimes you have to realize the relationship has a duality. I can't hate and I can't kick. I can't hate because I love and I can't kick because I'm scared to. And it's not enough that I love. You love, yeah. That's not enough. I always say people have to realize that divorce is one of the greatest sins in the Torah. Yes, you have the capacity to do it. You have a legal right to do it. But you have to realize the Torah says you have to be kind to your fellow man, and there's nothing more vicious that a person can do to his spouse and his children than to get divorced. Make it work. Go work on it. But to get divorced, okay. That's putting a knife in her heart. What? I don't know. I wouldn't say a last solution. I would say no solution. Work it out. Get therapy. Figure something out. Go on long trips. I don't know. Make it work. What? Correct. There are situations where, right, but they're rarity. So, a person has to love, but it's not enough to love your spouse. You also have to know that God holds it against the person. If a person thinks he can just walk out of a marriage and, fine, I don't love her anymore. It says, so you don't love her. But there's one above and he's looking too. It's not just about loving. It's about making it work too. So that's the simple interpretation here. But Chazal give us another interpretation. Chazal say that when Moshe came and said to them, what does it say in the Pasuk? Hashem says, I have things to tell you. And the people say, whatever you say, God will do. What they were saying is, whatever you say. You want to give us a Torah, we will listen. Along comes Moshe and says, the Torah has a dual nature. There's a written law, there's an oral law. The oral tradition you get from the rabbis. But that, the people said, who wants it? We want God, we don't want rabbis. God, we can deal with. God gives us a Torah, fine, we'll do it. The rabbi's going to tell me how to interpret the Torah. I want to interpret the Torah. I don't know why he's any better than me. That they didn't want. The Torah Shebaal Peh, that the people said, not interested. And you look at Torah Shebaal Peh, it's very difficult to learn. You open a Gemara Shabbos, you got to go 7 chapters before you start seeing the Lama Tes Melachos. The oral tradition was purposely written in a convoluted fashion, in a manner where you can't just open a Talmud and figure it out. It wasn't given with an art scroll. So that you have to get a tradition, you have to learn from a Rebbe. But no one wanted that. I don't want to learn from a Rebbe. And that's when Hashem lifted the mountain and said, do or die. And it wasn't until the destruction of the first temple, when we were exiled. And why were we exiled? Because we wouldn't listen to our leaders. No one was willing to listen to the prophets. And suddenly we saw where it led us. People were intermarrying, desecrating Shabbos. The people of Israel were almost lost. And who kept them in line? Their leaders, the rabbis kept them in line. Throughout the exile, suddenly they see, hey, wait a second. We don't stand a chance without it. Along comes Mordechai, Esther, Anshei Knesset Hagdola, and then on Purim, they come to the great realization. Wait a second, there's no other way. And then on Purim was the first time, almost a millennium after the story. Wow, a millennium after the story, right? Purim, they suddenly realize, no, we want it. And that's why Purim, they re-accepted, they reaffirmed the acceptance of the Torah, Me'ava. Then they accepted it out of love. But it took them a millennium. It took a destruction. It took tens of generations before, okay, they realized they needed it. We realized we needed it. So that's why here it says, yes, they wanted it. And then later on, it says they were at the foot of the mountain, which we have a tradition means the mountain lifted off its base. And Hashem said, take it or die. Hashem tells Moshe, I'm going to appear in the thickness of a cloud. The nation will hear me talking to you and they will believe in you forever. This pasuk tells us this idea that the Rambam stresses time and again, that the revelation at Sinai was a once in history occurrence. Hashem says they'll believe in you forever because no one can ever compete. This is what's going to happen, and the people will see that I talk to you. So who can compete with the mass revelation? The nation has to prepare. Why does the nation have to prepare? So we have a halacha that says that when a man emits his seed, he becomes defiled, he goes to mikveh, at nightfall he becomes pure. So they could have just separated from their wives for one day. But the Torah tells us another halacha, that when a woman has the seed come back out of her, meaning most of the man's seed comes out. So when it comes out, she becomes defiled. And we have a halacha, we have a tradition derived from these psukim, that for 3 days the seed can remain alive. After that it goes sour. So for those 3 days when it comes out, so then she becomes defiled. So Moshe says, I want you guys to separate for 3 days so that the women will be able to be present at Matan Torah. This whole sanctity and separation was, it's not said overtly, it's said more modestly, but the idea was, this way the people, the women will be pure and will be able to be present at the giving of the Torah. So they sanctify their garments and they prepare themselves for 3 days. Hashem tells them when the shofar blasts, you could reascend the mountain. And from here we learn another halacha, that if Beis Din makes an institution to prohibit something, they have to make another institution to permit it. It's not enough that they give a deadline and they say by this time it's over. They have to make a declaration it's hereby over. Because otherwise the Shekhinah lifted from Sinai. Why does there have to be another shofar blast where Hashem says, now you can all go up? I see the Shekhinah left. It's over. Show's over. Now we could all go. No, there has to be another shofar blast. So, on the third day, there's lightning, there's thunder, there's heavy clouds, tremendous trumpet, tremendous shofar being blown, and everyone's scared. 2 million people around the mountain. They're scared. Moshe has to bring them out. We have a tradition that they all overslept. And that's why we stay up on Shavuos night to make up for them. They slept. We stay in anticipation. And they're standing at the foot of the mountain, which we explained earlier. Sinai is covered with smoke. Hashem descended with fire. And the mountain is shaking. Moshe speaks and Hashem answers. And Hashem comes down to Sinai and calls Moshe to come up the mountain. Moshe goes up. Moshe wants to stay on top. Hashem doesn't want Moshe on top. Moshe wants to be there when Hashem gives the Ten Commandments. Hashem doesn't want the people to be able to say later on that Moshe got a microphone system. It was Moshe yelling from the top of the mountain. So in spite of all the lights and everything, Hashem wants Moshe off the mountain. So Moshe says, Hashem says to Moshe, go warn the people not to come up. I'm going to talk. They might be attracted and run up the mountain. Go warn them again not to come up the mountain. Moshe says, they can't go up. You already warned us. I already told them. So God says to Moshe, okay, go down and you come back up with Aaron and the Kohanim. But the nation shouldn't run up. Moshe goes down, and before he could come back up, Hashem starts talking. So that's how the Medrash describes it. Moshe wanted to stay up, and Hashem said, no, go down. So he goes down, and before he could come back up, the show begins. First commandment. Good question. So simple understanding is that the Kohanim is a reference to the firstborns in each family, that they were Kohanim. First commandment, Hashem says directly. And we have a tradition that the commandments went as follows. In one split second, all 10 commandments were set. And then each one was set separately. Anochi, you'll notice the first two commandments, Hashem speaks in first person. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. You guys know the Kuzari. Hashem doesn't identify himself as the creator of the world because he didn't show them that. That's by virtue of the fact that I show you I control the world. Now you can understand I created the world. But what you do know is I took you out of Egypt. Number two, Lo yelcha lokim achrim al panai. We have a tradition that with each commandment, the people dropped dead. And that angels came and resurrected them. And after dying twice, they said to Moshe, enough, we can't hear anymore. That we only heard the first two commandments from Hashem directly. And that's why afterwards, the commandments are said in third person. It says, Lo tisa et shem Hashem Elokecha. The third commandment is already in third person. Don't take Hashem's name in vain. The first commandment is I am Hashem, your God. The third commandment is already Him. Don't take Hashem's name in vain. So we have the proactive commandment and the prohibition. What's unique about the Ten Commandments? What's unique about Ten Commandments?
It's a special set of ten.
So there was a time when they wanted to institute to say the Ten Commandments in shul every day. And the rabbis forbade it. Because you had apostates who were claiming, it's only the ten. That's what's really important. Everything else is adjuncts, but the ten, that's what you really got to keep. And no, we hold that the ten have the same weight as everything else. They have their weight, but they don't have any more weight because they were the Ten Commandments. These Ten Commandments are part of 613 mitzvot. They're not unique because they are the Ten Commandments, halachically. Nonetheless, Hashem chose these ten. So Nachmanides says, well, we have a halacha that before a person does giyur, before he becomes converted to Judaism, he has to have a sampling. He has to know what is this Judaism. Theology, halacha, mitzvos, big, small, easy, hard. So that's the Ten Commandments, says Nachmanides. The Ramban says they needed a sampling. They're going to become Jewish now. So they had to know what's Jewish, what does it mean? So they got a sample. We learn the laws of gear from this parsha. This parsha, next parsha, but this stance of Sinai. Rav Saadia Gaon says no. The Ten Commandments are commandments that encompass all 613. Meaning every other mitzvah comes under these headings. The Ten Commandments are really headings. You have to know how the headings play themselves out into 613, but they're really headings. And then Rav Saadia Gaon went on to write a song in which he shows how each of the commandments really encompasses many mitzvot. And there used to be an ancient custom that they'd sing this song of Rav Saadia Gaon's on Shavuos. Shavuos morning we read the Ten Commandments. So before they'd start reading, they'd go through the song by Rav Saadia Gaon called the Azharot. So that's Rav Saadia Gaon's understanding of the Ten Commandments. What's so terrible about taking Hashem's name in vain? So, I want maybe to discuss something else, and then we'll come back to this. What's so terrible about bowing to Zeus, to Buddha? I just tilted my head. I came to this realization almost 10 years ago. There was an article about how one of the Arab countries were going to execute a woman for committing adultery. And this woman in New York writes, I can't believe in the modern world today they're going to execute a woman for committing adultery. What'd she do? So I read the article and I was startled. I reread the article and that's what she said. In the modern world, how could they kill a woman for committing adultery? So I stopped and I thought to myself, wait a second, in her mind, there's no, you know, what's the big deal? But then I said, okay, so then, is there anything that's a big deal? Anything short of taking her life, which I could also say, what's the big deal? There are more people born tomorrow. If I want to say, what's the big deal, then what's to stop me from saying, what's the big deal about anything? If I'm talking values, so you know what? There was a big philosophical argument in the days of the Talmud, in the days of the Mishnah. Is it better for a person to be alive or dead? You guys know what the Talmud's conclusion was? Yeah, better not to have been born. It's a big challenge to live up to your responsibilities in this world. Okay, you got to do it. But once you're here, you got to do it. But would have been better... You know, those who aren't yet born, they're better off. They don't have that challenge. No potential, but no challenge. So, you know, that was the law in stone. If you threw a rock and caused the guy to bleed, you did him a favor. You let blood. No, pay him his doctor bill now. That was the law in stone. So, the Torah teaches us, first of all, a value system. Hashem says, I created this world. I run the world. And I'm telling you, there's good and there's bad. There are things that are evil. You can't just say, what's the big deal? Come along the Ten Commandments and tell us, no adultery. No kidnapping. Thou shalt not steal. Our tradition is kidnapping. Because our tradition is that these are things that you get the death penalty for. So regular thievery, you pay, you get taxed, but you don't get the death penalty for it. So that's why we say when it says don't steal, it means don't steal a human being. It's talking about human trafficking. So there is a big deal. And the Torah gives us that way. And then the Torah tells us to take Hashem's name in vain is a big deal. What does that mean? When I take a vow by Hashem's name, I'm saying, believe me, I'm telling you the truth. By Hashem's honor, I'm telling you the truth. Well, if when you say by Hashem's honor, that's what a vow really is, that carries no weight, so you've really destroyed everything the Torah rests upon. The whole Torah is by Hashem's honor. Yeah, there is Hashem. He cares what's going on. And I respect him. And I respect his word. So if I can come and say a lie to you by Hashem's honor, so I'm destroying the world. And that's what the Talmud says in Shavuos. The Talmud in Tractate Shavuos says that they'd warn a person numerous times. They take a person through this whole process. They take him through in a dark room with candles and they show him a coffin and they tell him, you see, that's where you're going to end up. One day you're going to have to give judgment over what you're taking a vow for. They take him into a room and let him stand there alone and think about his death before you take a vow, because a vow is a very weighty thing. They'd blow up balloons. They didn't have rubber then. They had hides and they'd pop them and scare the guy. Their point was, hey, think about what you're about to do, because you're saying by Hashem's honor what I'm saying is true. That's a vow. And the Talmud says anyone that takes a vow, a false vow, brings great destruction to the world. And now we can better understand why that's so, because the whole Torah is based on the fact that there is such a concept as Hashem's honor. And if that doesn't exist, so then everything's destroyed. There's no moral system, there's no moral fiber. That's where it ends up. I'm saying that's... Then we have the commandment, Zachot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, to commemorate the day of Shabbos. That's the biblical commandment to do Kiddush. Before I do Kiddush, I often ask my kids, what are we doing now? The biblical mitzvah of the Ten Commandments, Zachot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. That's Kiddush. Commemorate Shabbos. How do you commemorate it? You take a cup of wine, or you do it in prayer. You say, today is Shabbos. How else do we do it? At the end of Shabbos, we say, now Shabbos is over, what we call Havdalah. We take another cup of wine, and we say, okay, now we're going to discern. The holy day is over, the weekday is starting. So we do the Zachot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho by delineating where Shabbos begins and ends. How else do we do it? When we have something delicious, we save it for Shabbos. All week long, we remember it's Shabbos. So if you get a good candy bar, if you're going to be able to afford to buy another one and it's going to be available, so you can buy another one for Shabbos. But if not, then you should hold on to it for Shabbos, because that's part of how we sanctify Shabbos. How else do we do it? Every day of the week, we say, Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbat, Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbat. Every day we say, today is the first day since Shabbos, the second day since Shabbos. We're commemorating. Today is this number of days from Shabbos. What's so important about Shabbos? Shabbos is the testimonial that Hashem created the world. Look at me, I'm resting like Hashem did. Hashem created the world in 7 days. I'm resting like Him. So Shabbos has two natures. One is Shabbos commemorates creation, and one is Shabbos commemorates the Exodus from Egypt. And Shabbos has two natures. One is proactive, and one is prohibitive. Proactive, you make kiddush, you eat delicious things, you light candles. That's commemorating, Hashem made it a special day. Then have prohibitions. Don't do work, don't plow, don't harvest. That's commemorating that I was once a slave. I used to plow, I used to harvest, I used to do all this for the Egyptians. So there are two natures to Shabbos. In Parshas Yisro, the Ten Commandments say, Zohar Yom HaShabbos. Remember it, sanctify it, commemorating creation. In Parshas Vayeschanan, where we review the Ten Commandments, it says, Shomer Yom HaShabbos. Watch out on that day of Shabbos. Don't do work. Remember you were a slave in Egypt. Two aspects of Shabbos. We have a tradition that Hashem said both at one time. We can't say two things at once. We can't hear two things at once. But Hashem did. And they were able to hear it because Hashem was talking. What? I guess so. honor your father and mother. What does that mean? So honor means to service. It means if they need help putting on their coat, you help them putting on their coat. If they need you to drive them someplace, you drive them someplace. They pay for the gas, but you don't have to foot the bill. But you do have to serve them. What? Okay. Don't murder. That's clear. Don't commit adultery. That's clear. Don't kidnap. That's clear. Don't give false testimony. That's clear. Don't covet. What does it mean to covet? Lo tachmod. So there's a very important Ibn Ezra here. Did you guys ever dream of marrying Eve? She was the most beautiful woman that ever lived. No. Because you know you're never going to marry Eve. Okay, you'll tell me you never saw a picture of her. Let's say you saw a picture of someone from 150 years ago. Would anyone say they're getting all excited, they're dreaming, they wish they could marry her? No, because they know it's beyond their realm, right? Says the Ibn Ezra. How does the Torah tell us don't desire? What do you mean, but I do desire? A person will tell you, but my neighbor's wife, she's gorgeous. Well, how can you tell me not to desire her? I'm married, you know, she's on every ad and everything. How does the Torah tell a person not to desire his neighbor's wife? So the Ibn Ezra says, you don't desire what you think you won't get. Things that you know are never going to happen, if you really know it's never going to happen, you don't even fantasize. You don't desire. You fantasize and desire things that somewhere in your mind you imagine it could happen. That's why people don't fantasize about the dead. They know it's never going to happen. The Ibn Ezra says, he says it about the princess. He says, I guess in their days, a princess was something that you knew you'd never get. Today, you don't. Princesses are you know, whatever. Look at Clinton's daughter. Okay, so I wouldn't call her a princess, but whatever. Father's not king, she's no princess. So the Ibn Ezra says when the Torah tells us not to desire, what the Torah is telling us is, get it clear in your head. It's not going to happen. It's his wife, it's his house, and there's no way you're going to take it from him. And if you really realize that Hashem is running the world, and you're not going to have that, that's off limits, what's his is his, then you don't desire it. The root of desire is that fantasy, I could make it happen. It's a very deep insight that Ibn Ezra tells us here. So that's on one level. On a practical level, how does one do it? The Talmud tells us every person, every day has an improper thought. Powerful line. Every person, every day. So it's up to us to control our thoughts. Everyone knows you can think about something for a second, or you could ponder it. You could sit and think about something. And it's up to us to guide our thoughts and not to let our thoughts sit and rot over something. So the Pasuk says the nation was stunned. They stood from afar. The Medrash discusses how far back they were thrown every time a commandment came out, and the angels came and pushed them all back up. And they tell Moshe, well, we're going to die. We can't handle this. And Moshe says, yeah, but now you're going to be handle everything. You're going to be able to handle everything life has to throw at you. And that's what the Rambam says, Maimonides, in his letter to the Yemenite Jews. He says, the reason we can stand up to all the tests, every Holocaust, every Inquisition, every challenge the Jewish people keep coming back is because of our parsha. Because we were given an understanding that goes beyond any room for doubt. Go compete with that. Show me something that comes close. You have nothing that comes close to a revelation between among 600,000 people. You don't. So we could stand up to every challenge, and we have. Hashem tells Moshe, tell the people, you saw me. So don't make any gold and silver things. And that's a big Yetzer Hara we have sometimes, to serve Hashem the way we think. And Hashem says, here's what I want. And that's very humbling, very hard. But I think it should be different. And that's the greatness you'll see throughout the next Parshiyot, that Moshe and Aaron and Bezalel time after time they do exactly what Hashem said. And you know what? Every artist knows. You want to leave your mark. Let me do things just a little bit the way I think, and there should be part of me in it. The greatness of an Eved Hashem is the closer he can get to this is what Hashem wants. And the realization that the greatest thing I can do is what he wants. Notice how the parsha ends with something seemingly simple. Hashem says, I don't want private parts revealed. You're in my temple, go up a ramp, don't go up steps. And you'll see time and again that the Torah deals with things on a very honest and straight level. A person has to know modesty is important. A person has to know that fairness is important. The first mitzvah we're going to deal with in next week's parsha is don't let a person suffer in slavery. Here's how he gets out of slavery. We finish the Ten Commandments, and right away the Torah deals with the people who are underprivileged. They don't have rights like everyone else. How do they get their privileges back? The Torah deals with life. The Torah is a living Torah. And so the Torah deals with our mundane needs and how to be holy people in the mundane world. Perhaps we should conclude with one last thought. We have five commandments on one tablet and five commandments on another tablet. Now, when you look up there, they write two words, the first two words of each commandment, so they all have two words. They're all equal. But if you look in a Chumash, you see the first commandment has about 30 words, 40 words. The second commandment here, first commandment has 2, 4, 6, 8 words. Second commandment, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, somewhere around 30 words. The first five commandments, Shabbos, has about 40 words. You go to the next five commandments, two words. Lo sirtzach, don't murder. Lo sinach, don't commit adultery. Lo signo, don't steal. So five apiece isn't an equal divide of words. So the Medrash says, you're right. But you needed big print on lo sinach. Had to say it in big print, don't commit adultery. Had to say it in big print, don't steal. Yeah, the first five are between man and his creator, so they were a smaller font. The second five, they were between man and his fellow man. So Hashem said that has to be written in big.